Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Thursday, December 20th, 2018. We have some football news to discuss before we preview two of the big games from Week 16 later on in the show. First, Pro Bowl nominations came out on Tuesday. You're not going to believe it. There were some players who are deserving of Pro Bowl nods who did not make it to the Pro Bowl. I know, shocking to you, shocking to me, but to discuss this breaking news, to discuss something that has never happened before in the history of Pro Bowl nods, we have a very qualified person to discuss that. My pick, if ESPN was sending a Pro Bowler to Orlando, would be ESPN's Mike Sando. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thank you.
Do you have any interest in going to Orlando? Does that motivate you?
I would like to do Pro Bowls. I've done a couple. I've gone to a couple of Pro Bowls. It's a different type of venue if you're looking for access to players in a relaxed setting. I really sort of have always wanted ESPN to say, hey, Mike, the Pro Bowl's in Hawaii this year. Could you go over a couple weeks early? You know, just get a sense of the scene, maybe stay later, bring your family. That's sort of my ideal Pro Bowl dream. It hasn't happened yet, but I always thought that would be kind of cool.
I think you might have to wait a while for that one. But I, if anyone deserves to go and have a couple week vacation, it is you. You are certainly one of the most hardest working people at ESPN, and you're someone who watches a ton of football, so you're perfectly qualified to talk about these Pro Bowl nominations. Now, I joked about it in the intro. Every year, of course, there are players who don't make it, and so I tweeted about this, and I want to talk to you about it as well. There's that classic trope of, oh, well, this guy deserved to make it, and the problem is, we never hear about the alternative of, oh, well, if that guy deserved to make it, well, who should actually be taken out of the Pro Bowl? And so we're going to do that here. We're going to go position by position. I think in most cases we're not going to have many changes, but I'm going to ask you what you think, and I'm going to certainly have my own picks as well for who we would take in and out of these current Pro Bowl rosters. And just before we start, you know, if we take a guy out, at least from my perspective, I'm not saying he's bad. I'm not saying that he is a scrub. Like, this is just the difference between being the third best player at a position or the fourth best player at a position when it comes to quarterbacks or players like that. So it's not an insult to these players. So please do not get mad.
Welcome to my world, Bill, as a Hall of Fame selector, because before I was a selector, I'd be sitting in my office and the results would come out and I'd have seven other things going and I would say, Chris Carter didn't make it? I mean, who are these voters? I mean, they don't think Chris Carter's a Hall of Famer or whoever, you know. Right. And then once I'm in there, my reply is always, okay, totally agree with you. Who we taking out? And they go, you know, we're really measuring. We're lining up a bunch of guys who are within an inch of each other in height, and we're arranging them by height. And we're kicking out the two shortest guys, but they're all between 7 foot and 7'2". So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way to put it, actually. I'm going to steal that one. This comes up in the future. I'll credit you, though. I promise.
Thank you.
So let's start with the AFC. I think I have more changes in the AFC than the NFC. And I will say, and speaking of maybe controversial decisions that are not a reflection on a player's innate abilities, start with the quarterback position. Patrick Mahomes, Philip Rivers, and Tom Brady were the ones nominated. For me, I would take out Tom Brady and I would insert in Andrew Luck, not because Tom Brady is suddenly bad and he's, you know, a doomed quarterback and the Patriots aren't going to go anywhere in the playoffs. I just think that Andrew Luck has been playing really incredible football with less to work with than Tom Brady has this year.
Yes, and Bill, you and I are like-minded because I wrote a thing on the Pro Bowl snubs today, and as I was going through it, I thought I was going to have like 15 guys, and then as I looked at all the reasons, you know, what's a real snub, what's not a snub, I think you tweeted something like that. I actually came up with four actual snubs. There's other ones that are positional misunderstandings, but anyway, to lead off my four snubs, one of them was Andrew Luck Brady. Again, I'm not going to argue against Tom Brady. I don't think he suddenly can't play. But I do think these are two guys who are on teams where there has been some questions about the weaponry, you know. I think that, you know, for reasons I'm sure that aren't just having to do with the player, but the player's a big part of it. I think Andrew Luck's probably had better success making use of what he's got and having a successful season. There's a lot we can talk about Andrew Luck, and we could probably do a whole show on him, but I agree with you. He would be my guy over Brady.
Yeah, I think he, you know, deserves to be in that discussion. I think, you know, again, it'd be one thing if he was playing with, you know, top five talents. And yes, T.Y. Hilton, who's a great player, but this is, you know, the line has improved, but this is really a patchwork set of receivers. He's lost Jack Doyle for a chunk of the year. He's making, you know, Eric Ebron into a Pro Bowl caliber player, which I don't think a lot of people would have saw happening before the year. So I think that's a, you know, again, Tom Brady's still great, but I think Andrew Luck has probably played better this year. Running back, we have James Conner, who, of course, currently injured with a high ankle sprain, Melvin Gordon, who is also injured at the moment, and then Philip Lindsay, who I believe is the first undrafted offensive player, if I'm not mistaken, to make the Pro Bowl as a rookie. Is that accurate?
That sounds accurate, yeah. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head of who would be who it would be. That's a good lookup.
Is there anyone else who you figure should have been in that discussion, or who should have usurped any of those guys onto the Pro Bowl roster?
You know, I'm happy with those three. I think they're good. You know, I think Joe Mixon has had really good production this season. Lamar Miller's had good production. It feels like Derrick Henry's had his production in a smaller number of games. He's had a couple spectacular games. So I didn't protest here. You know, I think if Kareem Hunt were still on the Chiefs, we might have an interesting conversation about who's left out, but I easily just sort of didn't consider him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like it's not, no one's
going
to be arguing for Kareem
Hunt. Yeah, that exactly. That simplified it for me. I guess I'm okay with this and would have, you know, if Mixon were on there instead of one of those other guys, I'd probably be okay with it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. In terms of fullback, Anthony Sherman, I mean, I don't have a real strong argument for any particular fullback. It just seems like we're sort of having an antiquated system here where we're propping up Kyle Juszczyk's Hall of Fame credentials when he is a totally fine but not essential part of the Niners offense.
I know. I was reading, so Pro Football Focus did their Pro Bowl team, I don't know, maybe a week ago, and they said at the time, like, Kyle Juszczyk had, whatever, 500 snaps played, and, like, the next fullback was in the 200.
Right.
It's totally antiquated. I think the league will probably be a little late on doing this, but we'll sort of rethink some of this. I mean, we're setting up the Pro Bowl team as if we're in 21 personnel and it's 2004, you know, and we're not.
It just isn't realistic anymore. And that doesn't take anything away from Anthony Sherman or Kyle Juszczyk. They're valuable players to their team. But, you know, if you could choose between in the AFC, if you could choose between, again, Joe Mixon, who is an every down player when he's healthy for the Bengals, or Anthony Sherman, who is the sixth or seventh option for the Chiefs a fair amount of the time. I just think it's more appropriate to choose Mixon in terms of who's actually impacting football games. At wide receiver, I think pretty hard to argue with this bunch for me. I have DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, Antonio Brown, and Keenan Allen. I think four solid choices. Anyone you would add to that list or take off that list?
No, I would agree. What I would do in revamping this is I would add another receiver spot.
Interesting.
And then maybe a T.Y. Hilton makes it in. I mean, look, it's a three-receiver league on early downs now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a change in the last 10 years that's really accelerated and has grown even this year over last year. When I did a piece with Kevin Seifert earlier this year, we noticed that I believe three wide receiver offense on first down was, you know, up to 57% or something from 50 maybe last year. Wow. So I would add a spot and I'd feel great. I think we find that in both conferences that there's an ample supply of wide receivers. You're not going to have an embarrassing name if you go to five deep.
Yeah, I think the fifth guy for me would be Juju Smith-Schuster in the AFC. A lot of guys you could add. T.Y. Hilton would probably be in the bunch. Tyler Boyd could be in the discussion, but I don't think any of those guys are undeserving of Pro Bowl consideration.
Yep, agree with you. I would go between Smith-Schuster and Hilton also.
Mm-hmm. So tight end, Travis Kelce, Eric Ebron, obviously two players having great years as receivers. I think Kelce pretty much is a lock. Anyone you would consider besides Ebron?
You know, I think Jared Cook's had some good production. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Gronkowski has the name but hasn't had the production this year. So I'm fine with Ebron, and I liked the signing at the time. He was on my value signing list in the offseason. And with Luck being healthy, I think they've been able to maximize it. You know, I think that was the key variable for them. They were betting on Luck being back. He has been. We both think he's a Pro Bowler, and I think that's helped Ebron rise and raises questions about, hey, what was going on in Detroit with the quarterback, with the play caller, with the offense, because this is more of the Ebron that we envisioned coming out. Maybe he got a kick in the pants by being you know, let go, whatever. But good signing, good player, good Pro Bowl selection.
Yeah, going to be very interesting. He's a free agent after the year, if I'm not mistaken, no?
Was it a one-year deal?
No, sorry, it's a two-year. Like, sorry, I lied. It's a two-year deal.
It's a two-year deal. I think he got 2 years, maybe 13 or something like that.
That is exactly accurate. See, this is why you're the Pro Bowler. 2 years, $13 million on the nose. That is correct. So that's a pretty good deal. Maybe they, you know, maybe they renegotiate during the offseason, but obviously one of the best signings of the offseason by Chris Ballard there in Indianapolis. Offensive line is always difficult. There is a bit of scholarship to this, it feels like, where players seem to make their way on because they have made their way on in years past. A tackle, and certainly it seems like left tackles are favored here, as I'll get to, because there's Taylor Lewan of Tennessee, who's missed some time here and there, but I think still a very sound player. Alejandro Villanueva of the Steelers. And then Eric Fisher of the Chiefs, who is one of the guys I have coming off this list.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, one thing that stands out for me, Bill, in the tackle selection is that it's all, you basically have to be a left tackle to make the team.
Right.
You know, and that'd be a fun thing to look at is how many right tackles go to the Pro Bowl. And, you know, we've all seen the, you know, people raise the idea that there's less of a premium on left compared to right. And we can debate that all day. But I think eventually you would have some right tackles get on there. In the AFC, you know, I thought Ronnie Stanley, Laremy Tunsil are guys having good years. It seems like Mitchell Schwartz, a good right tackle for the Chiefs, independent of his brother tweeting about his greatness every week. I say that jokingly. Jeff Schwartz, who has his brother's back and makes some good points.
Of course. But,
I think it feels to me like there's some flexibility in this spot. Who would you slide in there for Fisher?
I think I'd go Mitchell Schwartz, notwithstanding that Jeff Schwartz is a friend and guest of the show. I think he's playing at an extremely high level and has for several years now. And I think if you went to that coaching staff and said, who's the best tackle you guys have? I think most of them would say Mitchell Schwartz. And that's nothing against Jeff or Eric Fisher, who's a very solid player. But I just think, you know, playing against in a division where even with Khalil Mack leaving, he's going up against some pretty talented pass rushers on the right side. I just think he's consistently been at the high level where you say, okay, this 1 year is not a fluke. He is a, you know, maybe the second best right tackle in the league after Lane Johnson.
You know what I'll say is awesome, though, is like, so Eric Fisher was the number one pick in the draft when no one wanted to have the number one pick. Remember,
yes.
There was no great quarterback or anything. And so here they are. He's played at least well enough to make a Pro Bowl team without there being protests, you know, outside the NFL offices. I mean, we could debate it, but it's not like a horrible selection. And they got the best quarterback in the league anyway now, maybe, you know, and Patrick Mahomes are certainly one of the top five. So nice job, Chiefs.
Yeah, and it seemed like, you know, Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel was basically going to be a, you know, it's 50-50. Maybe you preferred one or the other, but they're basically in the same class. And Luke Jokel is out of football right now, and Eric Fisher is a Pro Bowl tackle. So might be a reflection on who's better at developing players, Andy Reid or the various Jaguars head coaches. I think that we maybe have an answer to that question. At guard, we have David DeCastro, Marshall Yanda, and Quentin Nelson, the rookie guard from the Colts. Any issues here?
I thought it was a good group of guards. I didn't have a major protest. I thought maybe, you know, Shaq Mason could be in the mix. I think
it's
good to see Quentin Nelson get his due early. You know, one of the, I did a top 25 players under 25, and I almost, you know, I was close to putting him on it, but I sort of shaded away from the rookies. We were only maybe halfway into the season, and you give him some more time to establish themselves. One of the things that, you know, wasn't really a criticism was just, hey, he's had a lot of splash plays, but let's see the consistency more over time. You know, I still think that's a good bet to make long term, but I don't feel like Marshall Yanda is just, you know, having an off the charts amazing year and is way better than Shaq Mason or some other alternative. You know, in short, I'm okay with it. I'm not protesting, but it doesn't feel like we have Steve Hutchinson and in his prime and just the absolute best yet. Maybe that's Nelson next year.
Yeah, I think certainly still, if you asked him, I think he would say he still has room to grow. But obviously, you know, his highlight plays have been offensive line gift fodder for offensive line Twitter this year. At center, we have the Pouncey brothers, Marquise and Mike. Quite simple there. Any issues with the centers picked for the AFC?
You know, I was talking to a personnel director last night, and I asked him, you know, is this just because it's name recognition? He didn't have a real problem with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure. I looked at the Pro Football Focus list. They had Rodney Hudson and and Matt Curtis from Denver. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just be honest. I don't know that I know for sure I'm at that position to have a strong enough opinion on it. It seems odd that the top two guys would just happen to be brothers and the name recognition factor comes to mind, but I haven't heard anything to say that they're unworthy. Have you?
Not really. I mean, I think Rodney Hudson's, you know, totally fine. I think playing for the Raiders is going to hurt his chances, though. I think Ryan Kelly has played at a high level. He just maybe has missed a couple of games, and that might hurt him. I mean, I do think that it's maybe the most difficult position to judge because we don't know the line call. So, you know, unless you really know, hey, this guy is setting protections at a high level every week, or this guy, you know, can handle a nose tackle one-on-one or get to the second level more than another guy. And even with PFF grades, that's going to be really tough to do. So I'm pretty skeptical of our knowledge. I think I would defer in this case to, you know, what an offensive line coach thinks or what an executive thinks or people who are a little more in tune with the X's and O's than I think someone like me is.
I got to tell you, too. So when I used to cover the Seahawks on the beat of the News Tribune in Tacoma for 9 years, my partner in crime was Dave Bowling. He was our columnist. And Dave played center and was a long snapper under Lee Corso at Louisville. And he would watch the game through his binoculars. And I knew, like, knew more about center and interior line play than any beat reporter in the league, guaranteed, during those 9 years. Not because of me. I was like, it was like sitting next to a scout. And he would be, like, telling me in warm-ups, he'd be like, oh, this snapper's best guy I've seen this year. And I'm like, what are we doing? It was amazing the level of insights. I miss that about being on the beat every week and sitting next to Dave getting the total intel on the centers. It was awesome.
That's awesome. All right, Mike, well, let's get to the defensive side of the ball here in a moment, but first wanted to talk about our pals at Dollar Shave Club. And I'm someone who I'm using Dollar Shave Club every day now. When I first got the stuff, I'd use it once or twice here or there. Every morning now, pretty much the first thing I do is I go into the bathroom, I get my toothbrush out, get my Dollar Shave Club toothpaste, it smells great, brushing my teeth, my breath doesn't smell bad for the rest of the day. It's a little victory amidst a sea of losses that happened during the day. It's a little victory to start my day. And the coolest part about using Dollar Shave Club stuff is that I don't have to go to the store to get it. There have been plenty of times where I've woken up in the past, I've gone to go brush my teeth, no toothpaste, or a tiny bit of toothpaste, and I'm just like, well, I guess this is my life now. No toothpaste in the universe for me. I'm just going to have bad breath from here on out until I get to the store hours later, and certainly I've embarrassed myself in front of people with my smelly breath. Well, good news is I don't have to worry about that anymore, because Dollar Shave Club is sending stuff to me when I need it. From once a month to once every 6 months, I'm fully stocked up, so I'm never going to run out of the things I'm using in the bathroom on a day-to-day basis. And right now, they've got a bunch of starter kits you can try for just $5. Like, for example, something that includes that toothpaste, their oral care kit. And after that, the restock box ships regularly sized products at a regular price. So what are you waiting for? Just get that starter set for $5 right now at dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. Again, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. On the defensive side of the ball for the AFC, I have a change here. I have a swap. There's J.J. Watt, Myles Garrett, and Melvin Ingram, all great players, but I think I would insert Chris Jones, who's having a career year for the Chiefs, and even though he plays defensive tackle really for the Chiefs, he's listed as a defensive end on the ballot, so I would take out Melvin Ingram, and I would insert Chris Jones.
Loved Lewis Riddick's tweet last night. He was going off on it. You know, I wouldn't say I chickened out, but when I did my list, I was like, hey, this isn't really anyone's fault. He doesn't play defensive end. I mean, almost all of his snaps are defensive tackles. So they need to have him categorized correctly so he can make the team. And I think if he were at defensive tackle, we would put him on the team. But I don't know. He's a different position. I mean, Melvin Ingram's a Leo, you know, in Gus Bradley's scheme. So I think that's an issue of characterization. I agree with you, Chris Jones with 14 sacks, playing inside, that's awesome. I mean, that's you know, Cortez Kennedy and guys like that did those types of things back in the day. It's very rare.
I mean, even at the defensive end, he has, you know, 14 sacks, and Melvin Ingram, who's a very good player, nothing wrong with Melvin Ingram, he has 7 sacks. It's, You know, Melvin Ingram is someone who makes an impact and certainly has had to shoulder a lot of the load without Joey Bosa. I don't think he doesn't deserve to be on the team necessarily, but I do think Chris Jones has been a, you know, just a real difference maker at defensive end.
Yep, even though he's playing tackle.
At tackle for the interior linemen, Geno Atkins, Jarrell Casey, and Cameron Hayward of the Steelers. Any changes there?
You know, no, I didn't really have a short list of other guys that I thought should be on there. Did you?
Not really. I would have put Chris Jones in for Casey if the positions had been laid out correctly. And Kendrell Casey's playing excellent football. Tight end's defense is pretty underrated, I think, at this point of the year, given how they've played in recent weeks. And otherwise, I might look at Larry Ogunjobi with the Browns as someone who I don't think it's his year yet, but would not shock me if he's on the roster come 2019.
Yeah, those are good points. I agree, but don't feel strongly that anyone who's classified as a D tackle should just automatically replace one of those guys.
Exactly. Yeah. At outside linebacker, I think there's some possible changes here. A couple guys who could be in the discussion. There's Von Miller, who I think is basically going to be a lock, and then there is Jadeveon Clowney and D Ford of the Chiefs. So, Mike, where do you stand in terms of these outside linebackers? Would you make any changes to these three?
Well, I'm okay. I just feel as though what Von Miller does and what Darius Leonard do are different things, right? I mean, and yet we, you know, Darius Leonard was classified as an outside linebacker and was up against those guys in voting, correct?
Yes, he was. That's accurate.
Yeah, so he ends up not making it, which, you know, he's probably going to make it next year in one way or the other because, you know, he'll have the whole year. Looks like a great pick, but I think that's somebody you could argue could be in there, but doesn't really play the position that those other guys are being evaluated for. And truth be told, those guys playing those other positions, those positions are more valued, you know? As good as Darius Leonard is, I think most people would rather have Von Miller.
Yeah, I would have assumed that you would put Darius Leonard at inside linebacker, in which case I would have put him on the roster ahead of Bernhard McKinney. But at outside linebacker, I still think I would put Darius Leonard ahead of Jadeveon Clowney, who again having a good year, but I don't think he offers as much as well rounded of a set of skills as Darius Leonard has for the Colts this year. What about Bradley Chubb? Would you put Chubb on the roster ahead of Clowney or Ford?
Yeah, you know, probably not yet, but I think it's going to happen. Probably, you know, maybe next year. I also think that he benefits from, you know, as Clowney does, from having another great player up front. So I'm okay just taking a longer view. Let's see how he does, you know, over time and next year. But he was somebody I at least had written down as a possible alternative.
Yeah, I think certainly he's going to have his chances to get there. Inside linebacker, Mosley on the Ravens, and McKinney, as I just mentioned, from the Texans. Anyone else who you would put on the roster?
Not necessarily. You know, I cross-referenced with the Pro Football Focus guys, and I think they had Schobert from the Browns as one of their guys who didn't make it. I can't say from firsthand watching if Bernhard McKinney should be on there, but you know, my impression of him over the last few years has been, you know, the coverage, there's some coverage limitations, you know, and if you want to take that into account, maybe you find another guy.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty thin position. Joe Schobert would make some sense. I like Tremaine Edmonds on the Bills, but again, a rookie, you know, you don't want to get over, you know, sort of overwhelmed by just a rookie playing at a level higher than maybe you were expecting heading into the season. But I don't have any issues with McKinney being on there. Good player, I think. Just maybe at a position that doesn't have a ton of talent. And if Leonard was an inside linebacker, that would make more sense for all parties involved, I think.
Yep, absolutely. There's not a Bobby Wagner or that type of guy on that side of the ball. And it feels like unless you're one of those guys, how valued are you at that position?
Yeah, I think absolutely. At cornerback, more controversial, I think, than maybe any other spot in the AFC. A lot of absolutely qualified candidates, in my opinion. But the four guys listed, and we could agree or disagree, are Xavien Howard with the Dolphins, I think having a, you know, phenomenal year. Jalen Ramsey with the Jaguars. Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots. And rookie Denzel Ward of the Cleveland Browns. Where do you stand at cornerback?
I'm not going to protest too loud. I think this is another one where we need a nickel corner position because it is a position. Mm-hmm. And we get down to the end here and we're like, okay, who's going to make this team? Why doesn't Chris Harris make the Pro Bowl? Well, he does. What he does is different than what some of the other guys do. And the market tends to value more what Jalen Ramsey, you know, or Xavier Howard are going to do in the game. Certainly, I think you could debate, you know, is Denzel Ward right now as a rookie the fourth corner slot? But I don't protest too strongly. Do you?
Certainly a really talented player, and I think he's played at a high level for good chunks of the year. To me, I would find a spot for Tre'Davious White of the Buffalo Bills, who I think is really underrated, playing on a defense that not a lot of people are watching, and that's been really maybe the second or third best defense in football since the first 2 weeks of the year, since that the infamous, you know, Vontae Davis retires at halftime game. So, you know, to me, you put him ahead of Gilmore, you put him ahead of Ward, I wouldn't have too many complaints. Even ahead of Ramsey, to me, I wouldn't have many complaints. I think he's, you know, he's in that group. I'm not offended that he's not on the Pro Bowl roster, but to me, I think he's every bit as good and deserving as those four guys.
You know, I think you're just saying that to avoid Bill's Twitter coming down on you. I'm kidding.
I don't think I have anybody left on Bill's Twitter who hasn't blocked me at this point.
I love it because I think he's a solid choice too. I think he is a good choice. I don't necessarily think that if we there's two different evaluations to be made. You know, who's played better and more consistently this season? Who would 20 out of 20 GMs take on their team if allowed to choose? You know, those are two different things. And sometimes sometimes, you know, those things blur a little bit in the evaluation. I think White, though, deserves a mention, and I've got him now on my list of guys we could consider as alternatives. You wouldn't be offended if they were in there.
Yeah, you know, I think if Stephon Gilmore, for example, if the Patriots make a deep run into the playoffs and he doesn't play in the Pro Bowl, I think White would be the first guy off the bench for me at the very least. It's safety. Yeah, Derwin James, rookie of the Los Angeles Chargers. Eric Weddle, the veteran safety for the Baltimore Ravens. And then Jamal Adams, who's going to be the starter at strong safety from the New York Jets. Any safeties you think should be added or subtracted to this list?
Well, there's no way that Derwin James or Jamal Adams can come off of there. I mean, to me, they're clear, easy choices. You would be embarrassed if they didn't make it. I guess the question is, would somebody, you know, you're talking about Bills, would somebody like Micah Hyde be perhaps a better choice than Eric Weddle at this point? I think that's certainly fair game to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Kevin Byard with the Titans. The interception numbers weren't there this year the same way they were a year ago, but I think still playing very solid safety. And yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to Hyde being on there. I think if you're going to pick a Bill, I would pick White, but you know, I am a little surprised.
Darn it, Bill. Oh, you're right. Why wasn't Byard on my snubs list? I snubbed my own snub.
Oh, self-snubber. Big mistake.
Oh, God. I'm going to have to call the editors and see if we can add it in 12 hours later.
I think I would consider adding a fourth safety. I think only three safeties is not ideal, but yeah, I don't have any issues with Weddle being on there. I still think he's playing at a high level. Do you have any, I'm going to just throw it out there for special teams, any special teams players you think should be added or subtracted?
You know, no, but that's only because I didn't do my homework on those guys. I knew when I was doing my snubs that I wasn't going to get that far, and I didn't, and I apologize.
That's okay. I looked at the Jets. Jets are number one in special teams DVOA, had two players selected in Jason Myers and Andre Roberts, who's been their primary, actually almost their entirety of their punt and kick return. So I have no issues there. Maybe you pick Justin Tucker just on, you know, the sheer consistency. I wouldn't be angry at you for doing that, but I think that's pretty much fine. And the long snapper apparently will be chosen by the coach of the Pro Bowl team. So long snappers, hopefully you've made friends with some coaches around the NFL there. We're going to hit a break and come back to more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined again by ESPN's Mike Sando. We are going through these Pro Bowl rosters and discussing our snubs, players who we might want to replace on the Pro Bowl roster. And we did the AFC before the break, so you're not going to believe what's coming up next. It is, in fact, the NFC. And we're going to start with another controversial position after AFC quarterbacks. Let's start with NFC quarterbacks who, if you submitted your vote 5 or 6 weeks ago, you might feel very differently about it right now, because the quarterbacks listed on the Pro Bowl roster are Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints, Jared Goff of the Rams, and Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers. Mike, would you replace any of those quarterbacks?
Well, maybe Goff. You know, you could make a case that, you know, Russell Wilson over over Goff or even Matt Ryan statistically. I would like to see sort of how the season plays out. I mean, they've been a different team lately. I think we've seen, you know, as their defense hasn't played as well, as they've lost Cooper Kupp, as basically, you know, Sean McVay has been less able to manipulate the early down advantages that are a key to football. The game's gotten harder for Jared Goff, and I think we've seen, you know, exposed is the wrong word because I don't think he's a bad player, but the bloom's coming off that rose a little bit, and I think we could talk about that one.
At least on the bubble there. I think he played so well that he probably, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to him being on the roster. I think he's still playing at a high level, even though he's certainly been less consistent over the last couple of weeks. But I don't know. I mean, I think Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan both deserve at least consideration. I might say Ryan just because of, you know, the sheer amount of the workload he's had to pick up. And with Russell Wilson, you know, they, of course, have been running the ball so frequently that they haven't really required Russell to throw the ball as much as Matt Ryan has. I'm getting the passing attempt numbers now for those two teams.
Oh, yeah.
Falcons are at 546.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Matt Ryan has been money on third down this year.
Yeah.
If I look at, you know, I kind of track some of those third down metrics, and he's been really good there. So I think we could do a whole show on how well Aaron Rodgers is playing this year. You know, if you were to repeat his TD to interception ratio to anybody, you know,
yeah, right.
There'd be no debate, but there's a lot to discuss with Green Bay. They're probably their own show, but I think that, you know, maybe even it's worthy to, if you added another quarterback to the rosters, I would be okay with it. It just feels like it's a passing league, right? So, yep. Let's acknowledge that.
Yeah, and I think one of those guys will probably end up making it for Breeze or Goff if one of them make it to the Super Bowl. But yeah, the Falcons, 546 passes attempted this year. The Seahawks, 377. So, you know, if Russell was running as much as he had in years past, maybe that would make the difference. But obviously he's you know, handing the ball off a bunch more frequently these days. He only has, how many carries? He has 57 carries this year, and some of those are going to be kneel downs. So yeah, I wouldn't be opposed. I think he's playing great. I just don't know that he has the volume for me to add him to this roster ahead of Matt Ryan. Speaking,
what I was going to say is, I'm with you, and I've made that argument. You can't give him credit for this, but what if they were taking advantage of first down more and throwing? You know, they're like historically run heavy on first down. Like it would be a major storyline in the NFL among all the analytics people if they weren't winning as much and outperforming expectations. But I would say that what Russell Wilson could have a ton more easy yards if they would take what's available on first down.
Yeah, I think that whole, you know, establishing the run argument, if anyone's established the run this year and if anyone should give teams the tendency of, hey, we're going to run the ball on first down, we're going to run the ball on first down, so don't worry about our play action game on first down. It's the Seahawks. I mean, those passes at this point should be there. So maybe that would be smart. Maybe that should be a thing they should consider over the final 2 weeks of the year is let's throw the ball more on first down now that we've established what we typically do on first down.
Yep.
In terms of the running backs, of course, Russell Wilson is someone who, you know, has dealt with a variety of running backs this year behind him at the position. Three workhorse backs. I don't have any issues with these three selections. Todd Gurley, Saquon Barkley, and Ezekiel Elliott of the Cowboys. Any changes you want there?
No, but I mean, you know, Alvin Kamara affects the game. Christian McCaffrey is an amazing workhorse run and pass game. Chris Carson has an amazing physical run style for a team, like you said, that is really putting it on the running game more than usual and maybe even more than is prudent. And Tariq Cohen's just been a nice type of player too. But I can't knock one of those guys out. I just wish that we could acknowledge the excellence of some of these other players.
Yeah, I think if we put Kyle Juszczyk out and put McCaffrey or Cohen in there, I would not have any issues. I think even Adrian Peterson could be in the discussion there at running back. So, yeah, I just think it's a constraint of the system, unfortunately. At wide receiver, four very solid choices, four great players. Again, no issues for me here. Julio Jones, Michael Thomas, Adam Thielen, Davante Adams at wide receiver.
Yeah, you know, I just I think Mike Evans and Odell Beckham are different than certainly Adam Thielen in terms of what they're asked to do. I think that the smarter we get about covering production at wide receiver, the more we'll be looking at things like where you're lining up, what types of coverages you're getting, what's being asked of you, how far down the field are you. And I just think Evans and Beckham are doing something that's more difficult with great production on fewer reps because they're not catching a bunch of five-yard passes. But I did this a few weeks ago when I did an analysis piece on all of the receivers who signed big contracts last offseason. I just watched all of their targets for like a 3 or 4 week period. And when you watch Odell Beckham, it's just different. Yeah. I mean, he's just to not have him on the Pro Bowl team because to me, you know, Thielen's in a high volume, average air yards of 8. Mm-hmm. Even though it's shorter air yards, he has the same yak per catch as Odell. I don't necessarily think it's the same. I'm kind of, I would not going to protest the guys that are on there, but I think Evans and Beckham to me would be guys who might be on there instead. And then we could be debating is Thielen getting his due?
Yeah, I think Adam Thielen, you know, averaging 12 yards per reception this year, Mike Evans averaging 17.9 yards per reception. I think to some extent the perception that there's garbage time involved and that he's been playing with, you know, from behind for most of the year, that they've had so many issues with their quarterbacks on offense sort of color his perception. But I still think he's playing at an incredibly high level. And, yeah, I think I would put Evans on there, you know, hearing that argument. I think I would put Evans possibly over Thielen. But, again, position where you could have a fifth wideout, and I don't think anybody would be complaining.
Totally agree. It needs to be done. It's wide receiver league, you know, as far as catching the ball.
At tight end, George Kittle, Zach Ertz, any issues there? I can't imagine who else I'd put on there besides those two.
No, you know, I think that if O.J. Howard had stayed healthy, you know, it would have been a nice run to the end, and we could, you know, say, golly, he's worthy too, but I don't think we're going to take off one of those other guys.
Yeah, Kittle is at 1,154 yards. Zach Ertz at 1,038. And then I believe the next NFC tight end in terms of receiving yardage, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong, is Jimmy Graham at 581 yards. So that is not really.
You're right. I saw Jimmy Graham on there. I saw him on there and I was like, no, yeah. Not going to do that one.
OJ Howard, who has missed the last, I believe, 5 weeks, still fourth in the NFC at tight end at receiving yards at 565, excuse me. So at offensive tackle, Tyron Smith, Teron Armstead, and Trent Williams. And these were one of the changes I made when I tweeted last night. And the one that got the most sort of blowback was taking Teron Armstead off this list.
Played well when he's been out there, but I believe he's played 9 games. If you look at, you know, if we were to have a draft mm-hmm. of tackles, those guys would go, might be the first three guys taken if we had to just play for one season. You know, Trent Williams is obviously maybe a little bit older, but to me, David Bakhtiari probably has had a better season by starting every game. And then we got into that whole right tackle, left tackle thing. You know, I think Ryan Ramczyk's had a good year, mm-hmm. but just won't be considered because he's a right tackle.
Yeah, I think I said Joe Staley, who I think is still playing at a high level. Andrew Whitworth, of course, deserves to be in the discussion at tackle. I think every year he continues to play at a high level. Bakhtiari, you know, I probably would be the guy who, if I give it some deep consideration, I would put on there. But I just don't know what Teron Armstead is playing at such a high level. I think he's been great. But I think, you know, it's not as if he is, you know, Bobby Wagner that year that Tony Dungy gave Bobby Wagner a MVP vote when he missed a bunch of action. I think Teron Armstead is playing great, but just missing 5 games, probably missing a 6th game this week, unless he can make it to this week. You know, it's just too tough for me to have him on this list over guys who are playing every week and playing at a high level.
Absolutely. And, you know, staying on the field has been an issue for him in the past. I think it's an important, you know, I think I was listening to Matt Hasselbeck on Mina Kimes podcast talking quarterbacks last week, talking about, you know, the old saying, the number one ability is availability, and some there's luck involved and all that, but that's a big part of it. And starting all the games over missing, what, a third of the games? More than a third of the games?
Yeah, more.
To me, that's a differentiator.
I think it is too. And again, not a knock on him as a player, just reality of judging a guy over 16 games when you miss, or over 14 games, I guess, because the Pro Bowl ballot just came out when you miss five of them. At guard, we have Zach Martin of the Cowboys, a guy who's been banged up this year, but still playing pretty well. Brandon Brooks of the Eagles, and Trey Turner, who is maybe the one Panthers lineman left who's been able to stay healthy all year.
Yeah, and I don't know if he is just overwhelmingly, worthy of it. But I didn't do as much homework on that position and don't have a strong opinion on an alternative.
Yeah, no one came to mind to me when I was looking through the rosters and thinking about who I'd watch this year, who I thought maybe was playing at a high enough level to really challenge there. Andre Speed, I think, is very good, but he's been hurt. Ali Marpet, I think, is a very underrated player.
And
might be in the discussion. But again, I think the Bucks just, they're so hard to watch in some cases that you don't want to, really devote all that much time to thinking about the Bucks if you're a typical Pro Bowl voter. But I think he deserves to be. I wouldn't have been offended if he had been on there instead of Trey Turner. But I think Trey Turner is also a very good player.
Yeah, Marpet's a good one. I like that. Yeah, I agree. As far as just consistently excellent at the position, there wasn't another guy that came to mind. And I would not say DJ Fluker, but I think he's made a great impact in Seattle when he's been able to play. It's not a Pro Bowl type selection, but he's been a good impact guard in terms of just physical presence, personality, leadership. But again, has missed games and probably isn't as consistent or versatile as some of the other guys.
Mm-hmm, I'd agree. Alex Mack and Max Unger are the two center selections. Again, two veterans, highly regarded. I did not find any way to push anybody else onto this list over those two guys.
Well, I think you could make a case for Jason Kelce over Mack this year. That was one thing. I asked a personnel director about that last night. It wasn't enough to make it a snub. I thought you could consider that. I love seeing Max Unger on here because, I used to cover the NFC West for ESPN.com when we had eight divisional bloggers, and the Max Unger trade from Seattle to New Orleans was really, in retrospect, a great move for the offensive line and kind of continuity and leadership for the Saints. And really, I don't think Seattle's offensive line recovered until this year. And I think it was an understated importance that he has had for two different teams. And I think the center position is an important position. I don't think it's just one of those interior guys you find a guy. I think we saw when Alex Mack went to Atlanta, it made a difference. And so these guys are important, and I'm happy to see Mack and Unger recognized. I think Kelsey's a good one too, but I don't have a huge objection.
Right, Mack, again, let's get to the defense in a moment, but want to talk about SimpliSafe. And guys, you know we all have stuff we put off doing that we need to get done. Whether it's cleaning my apartment, whether it's something as simple as doing my taxes, which every year I happen to delay until the very last moment. If it's, for example, writing a football column, which again, that's waiting until the last possible moment before I can get it done. Plenty of time for me to watch stuff on YouTube and procrastinate, but something always gets in the way. And home security can also be like that. You know it's a good idea, but there's never that day where you sit there and say to yourself, well, today is National Home Security Day, and we are going to get a home security system. Well, on today's podcast, today is National Home Security Day. And I think you should celebrate National Home Security Day by working with our friends at SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe believes nothing should come between you and protecting your home. So they've gotten rid of the reasons not to get home security. Other companies are going to have contracts. There is no contract with SimpliSafe. There's no price markups from any middleman and no installation windows. You're not going to be stuck at home waiting for an installation window because their system is engineered to do one thing brilliantly, and that is protect. If a storm happens to show up and your power gets wiped out, SimpliSafe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone line so you can't call out, SimpliSafe has that taken care of. If they destroy your keypad or your siren, SimpliSafe will get you the help you need. And that's exactly what you want. You want to know that you're going to be protected no matter what. And with SimpliSafe, you're always ready for anything or any scenario, which is the right way to celebrate National Home Security Day. So right now, you can get a jump on protecting your home by going to SimpliSafe.com /Barnwell. My last name, Barnwell. There's no time like now if you're a procrastinator like me, not offended. You know, you don't nothing to be ashamed of, but might as well get that home security taken care of on National Home Security Day today. That's simplysafe.com/Barnwell to get the protection you need today. Simplysafe.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. All right, so on the defensive side of the ball for the NFC, three great pass rushers at defensive end in Cam Jordan, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Daniel Hunter. Are you on board with those?
I am. I think they're good selections. You know, I do think that Frank Clark is a really good player. Chandler Jones has good production. Brandon Graham's a good player, but not enough to just kick one of those guys off.
Yeah, I still think those guys are just playing at a high enough level that I would not push them on off the list, put it that way. On the interior, again, same thing. Three really good options. Aaron Donald, I think an automatic pick. Akeem Hicks, someone who I think should be an automatic pick, even if some people don't think he's playing at that high of a level. I think he's, you know, playing, if not at Aaron Donald's level, at the next tier. And then Fletcher Cox, who second in the league in hurries and hits, I believe. Guy who doesn't have the sack numbers necessarily, but certainly an impactful defensive tackle. Anyone you would replace those three with?
No, I love that Hicks made it. I thought that was going to be a potential snub if, like, Kenny Clark made it. But that's awesome. I think he's deserving. I think you could make a case that he's been the most dominant guy up front for them this year, which would be amazing with Khalil Mack there. I think he's in that conversation. So really nice to see. Sunday night, we're going to get to see a good young interior player in Jerron Reed of Seattle. I think he's a good one to keep in mind for the future. But these three guys here, no problems at all.
Yeah, I think DeForest Buckner, Grady Jarrett, guys who might be, you know, just outside this list. Again, if you wanted to add a seventh lineman, I wouldn't be offended. I'd probably pick Buckner of the guys who weren't selected. But yeah, I just think guys playing at a high level. Outside linebacker, we have Khalil Mack. Again, that's going to be an automatic. Ryan Kerrigan, who's been very underrated for a couple of years now in terms of his consistent impact as a pass rusher. And then Anthony Barr, who I have to admit, I was a little surprised he ended up making this roster.
I was too, you know, and I considered, okay, is somebody a big time snub in that position? I think you could, you know, find a couple guys that were worthy. The Pro Football Focus cross check had Khalil Mack, Preston Smith, and DeMario Davis. So I agree, but Barr was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I think I would go with Levante David, a guy who very underrated. Sounds like I'm mentioning a lot of Bucks as my snubs for a team that's pretty bad, but I think Levante David's a guy who's deserved to make it for several years now. And it might be a career nod to have him as a linebacker, but I think he's a very underrated player.
That's a great point. And the personnel director I was speaking with last night mentioned him too as an alternative. So I think we're on the right track with him, and it's a matter of time. I think it'll happen. I think he's a good player. They just need to be, you know, as a team, not known for playing horrible defense, and that would help him.
Help is true. They were not the worst defense. Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's a very fair point. At inside linebacker, I think two obvious picks here in Luke Kuechly and Bobby Wagner, no?
Yeah. I mean, it would be a travesty if Wagner were on it and Kuechly's just in the same mold. I mean, they're just truly elite players at that position who are a joy to watch.
Yeah, I don't think you could put anybody else on there if you were so inclined. At cornerback, we have Kyle Fuller, who was having a year where we added interceptions to his play from a year ago, Patrick Peterson, Darius Slay of the Lions, and Byron Jones of the Cowboys. Any cornerbacks you would sneak on there?
I like this list. I mean, I think you could probably look around and see if there's somebody you'd put on there over Byron Jones, but I think he's really... Come on, I like the list as it is, and if you read, you know, Matt Bowen's got a great piece, his annual piece, giving out DB awards on ESPN.com. It's an E+ piece. These guys are multiple guys from this group, this NFC group, are on there, so I guess I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I'd say Marshawn Lattimore would be the first guy I'd think of as a guy who might be, you know, in that next tier. Maybe you put him on there ahead of Slay would be the one person I can think of. I think Byron Jones deserves to be on there. I have to admit, but just a deep position. Again, fifth cornerback would not be the worst thing in the world. And then at safety, Eddie Jackson, who, of course, is the playmaking king of the Bears defense, Harrison Smith, who is seemingly going to get on every year until He retires. And then Landon Collins of the Giants. I was a little surprised Collins made it on there, I have to admit.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think he's not as, you know, he's a basically a great run-defending safety, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. And so I wondered if there'd be someone else. But is it, what is it, DJ Swearinger maybe? I mean, is that,
guy, yeah.
You know, a player? I didn't necessarily see an all-world, you know, extremely versatile player at that position that I would put on there over him.
Yeah, I think Swearinger is the guy for me. A similar sort of player, so I'm not, you know, not offended that he's not on there. He might be offended that he's not on there. We may see a tweet or two from him about that, but similar sort of player. I just think he's had a better year in that sort of role than Landon Collins has. You know, you do see a lot of teams when they play the Giants, they're very happy to throw at Landon Collins, and not a lot of strong safeties who are necessarily going to be, you know, players who can hold up well in coverage, but I don't know that he stood out to me, but again, I'm not offended by it. I don't think it's a terrible pick, just not necessarily a selection I would have made.
It's a 55-45 pick for me. Like, I would, yeah. If Swearinger were on there, I'd probably be like, hey, it was nice to see Swearinger get on there. You know, Collins is a little bit bigger name, you know, and has the market, so it's good to see the voters, you know, recognize Swearinger. I think I'd rather be saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. Special teams for the NFC, Aldrick Rosas at kicker. Michael Dixon, the rookie punter for the Seahawks. Tariq Cohen as the return specialist. And then Corey Littleton as the special teams coverage guy. Any people come to mind for you as an obvious addition there?
No. Pretty cool that a rookie punter could make it already. Seattle took him, I believe, in the fifth round. There's a story behind the pick they acquired, too. I can't remember what it was. But he's really cool to watch. I enjoy watching him and the variety of punts, and you don't say that about too many punters.
Yeah, it's absolutely fair to say. I have no
also,
issues.
You know, also, he had the all-time great move by a rookie to take the ball out of the end zone and run for the first down against Detroit when it wasn't like an option. That wasn't like a built-in thing where the coaching staff says, hey, look, if they give you this look, you know, take off and run. He took off in a 4-minute offense situation, I believe, trying to protect a lead, and he ran for it like from his own end zone on like 4th and 7 or 8. I mean, it was unbelievable. So awesome play for him. Great gutsiness for a rookie.
Absolutely. And I think Johnny Hecker, you know, might be one of the best players in football. Would not be offended if he was on there again, but two guys playing at a high level, I think you could pick either of them, and I wouldn't be too upset. So that covers the Pro Bowl rosters. Mike, let's talk about one big game from this weekend coming up to finish up here. And I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New Orleans Saints, because I want to know what you think about Drew Brees. In terms of the last month of the season, it kind of felt like he was the MVP elect, where even if Patrick Mahomes might be a solid runner-up, it felt like Brees was going to be the guy. Like, it was his time. He'd been out of the discussion for so long. I think we talked about it, this very topic, earlier in the year on the show. And over the last few weeks, I mean, I have the numbers here. Over the last month, Drew Brees is 26th in QBR, 20th in passer rating, averaging 6.05 yards per attempt. I mean, do you think there is a serious issue with this Saints offense heading into this game with the Steelers?
It seems like there is a little bit to me. You know, it's look, the league-wide trend the last 3 weeks has been for way less scoring. So we've seen even, you know, we've seen Pittsburgh and New England play, you know, a very low scoring game. We've seen some low scoring games. So maybe that's just late in the season. We're in December and people are more familiar with the tendencies now of the offenses and are catching up. But I had sort of felt like they were kind of a clear favorite to get to the Super Bowl because of the home field advantage. I think they've been one of the few teams, maybe the only team in the NFC or one of the few teams in the NFC that's played pretty well on the road. I am a little concerned about the Saints. I think when you go from the level of production they had to really getting shut down by Dallas and then finding out since then that it's not really a one-time thing. It's, you know, sometimes you see a team hit a rough patch and it's kind of the wrong time. So I'm really watching them over the last couple weeks of the season. I think you could explain it away by saying, hey, Dallas had an amazing plan. They're a good team, but the explosiveness seems to have gone away a little bit. I actually think the Steelers have a good chance to win that game, even though it's in New Orleans. You know, I think they find a way to deal with Kamara, try to minimize that. And then it really comes down to, can Joe Hayden probably match up well with Michael Thomas? And from a Steeler perspective, I feel like he might be able to. You know, I feel like that Pittsburgh may be able to match up well with him. So if they lose another one, I think it becomes true, you know, that there are major concerns with the Saints.
Yeah, I absolutely think there's an issue. And you could wonder, maybe, you know, has losing Teron Armstead hurt the Saints on offense? Maybe that's that cause trouble for Breeze. I don't know that the numbers bear that out in a way, and they don't bear it out in a way. He's actually not being pressured as much without Armstead in the lineup. He's down to 15% pressure rate, actually, which is incredibly low, but might be trying to get the ball out quicker. 88.9 QBR for Breeze with Armstead on the field this year, 63.7 without. I mean, does it impact you to the point where you are worried about them in the playoffs? And do you think it's enough to sort of knock Breeze out of the top spot in the MVP race?
Well, yeah, to me, Mahomes is the MVP. I just feel like he's been so electric and produced even more. And you can see him doing it when they take away one thing. He just runs around and makes plays that Drew Breeze at his best and has no knock on him, has never been able to make. And he's doing it as a rookie. So I think this just makes the choice easy, the fact that they've fallen off a little bit. And I know, you know, Kansas City hasn't been scoring, you know, quite as much lately either, but I feel like what they are doing is being driven by Mahomes, and that he's going to win the MVP. For, you know, the Saints, you know, I don't think it's Armstead. I don't think that's only it. I mean, is there an explosive element with Ted Ginn that's missing? You know, there's something missing from them, I think, that is threatening down the field. And that would be probably where to look more than the left tackle spot.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. I don't think it's definitely, you know, Armstead specifically. I don't think any offensive lineman is going to make a 25-point impact in terms of QBR. You would probably get a pretty hefty raise if that were the case. But I think there is a... Yeah, I think they're going to figure it out, though. I just think I have enough faith in Sean Payton and Drew Brees that they've, you know, weathered enough storms in years past where even if it's not going to be, you know, Ted Ginn necessarily or as a downfield threat, maybe it's one of the other guys on that roster. I mean, certainly you think about their game last week. They had a touchdown that was turned into a touchback where Tommy Lee Lewis, I believe, was the guy who was diving over the pylon, right?
Yeah. Yep. I think, Bill, also sometimes you get into divisional play and your opponent knows you so well that weird things can happen. You know, you can see Seattle having to play the 49ers twice in 3 weeks and they lose one of them. You can see Carolina, which has been really struggling on defense, but knows Drew Brees. And that's a hard week for them, but it's an easier week because you know him. You know how to play him. You know what works. You know how you match up. So sometimes we see, you know, that like Tampa Bay takes an early lead on the Saints. You're going, what's wrong with the Saints? Well, it's an NFC South game. You know, some things can happen. You can have some weird games. So I don't want to over. I think this is a great test this week, Bill, to see if what we really think, because it's a big game at home against a team that we know is pretty good and has a lot on the line. So if the Saints take care of business and win the game, I kind of exhale as a Saints fan if I were a Saints fan, you know, and just say, all right, okay. But if the Steelers go in there and win the game, then I think it sort of confirms that the worries are real.
Yeah, I think last week you think about the Steelers' perspective when they were playing the Patriots. You look at the playoff charts that Brian Burke tweets out each week about how much each game can shift a team's playoff odds. Patriots last week, it was basically under 1%. I mean, they were going to be in either way. The seeding might change for the Patriots, but they were going to be in the playoffs either way. They had very little to play for in terms of their playoff lives, whereas the Steelers were above 40%. Probably one of the biggest swings and probably one of the biggest differences between a team who needed to win that game versus a team who didn't really need to win that game between the Steelers and the Patriots a week ago. Obviously, the Steelers are in much better shape after beating the Patriots. It would be nice if they beat the Saints, but I wonder if that was sort of, you know, last week where we saw a Steelers team that had been struggling and they had to win that game. And maybe it'd be nice if they won this game this week, but I think they're going to be in the playoffs regardless of whether they win or lose this game.
Yep. No, that's true. I agree. I think that does affect it when the swings are that big, and we have to take that into account late in the season. Some of these games just don't mean as much. And you see a team lose and you wonder, okay, was that part of it?
Yeah. Steelers are 96% to make the playoffs if they win per the Upshots model. 64, so still 31%, but not, you know, really would have sunk their chances last week. Really would have put them behind, you know, behind the Ravens in terms of the divisional discussion there. In terms of the Steelers offense, though, in terms of what we saw from the last week, obviously Jaden Samuels had a very big game at running back. They've had a lot of success with James Conner earlier this year as a runner. So two questions there for you. Number one, if we get James Conner back this week for the Steelers, how do you think they should split the carries between Conner and Samuels? And then from the second perspective, has their success changed the way you feel about Le'Veon Bell?
I think if Conner's fully healthy, I'd like to see him, you know, get a fuller workload. And I think he's been the guy this season and they've relied on him and he's done well. So, you know, you go with the hot hand at that position. If it's not working for him, you don't just stick with it to stick with it, but I'd get his workload up. Changing my mind on Le'Veon Bell, maybe that chapter's not fully solved yet. You know, I thought they couldn't be as dynamic offensively without him, and I stand by that. I mean, I think he's a dynamic, difference-making player, but I also think that how's the best way to say this? Sometimes you have those guys on an offense and it makes you do things that are unnecessary because you're trying to feed him or he's got to have his touches. And I think that they kind of at times this season found a nice balance where it was about the team. It wasn't about this guy's touches or how many balls is Antonio Brown getting. They just felt like they were in a good offensive group. So I would still rather have Le'Veon Bell on my team. I think that they can ultimately be more dynamic in any one game, but the way the season played out, it may have been better for them to not just sort of have to deal with the distractions that came along with it.
They haven't suffered very much, put it that way. They might be their best version of themselves if they had Le'Veon Bell and James Conner and Jaden Samuels all on the roster, but I don't know. I think if I'm a team who might be investing in running backs this offseason, if we have the cap space and, you know, we might be thinking about going after Le'Veon Bell, I think it'd give me a lot of pause if I saw that James Conner and Jaden Samuels were, you know, putting up similar numbers on a per game basis to Le'Veon Bell. So I don't know that it's going to change things. I think there's still going to be a team that's going to sit there and say, man, we just have to get Asar. We're going to pay him a lot of money because he's going to make our quarterback's life easier. But I don't know. I just don't know that he has been it feels like the Steelers offense has been the thing that's driven Le'Veon Bell as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, he's already declared his hand. What's most important to him? It's getting the big contract, the most money possible. Hey, that's great. I like money too. You know, it's important to all of us. But I still feel like, you know, what do they go to the combine for? You know, they go there to try, and what do they scout for? They want to see who loves the game, right? Who has the grit? Do we really want to pay trend-setting money at the running back position, and then after three games, when his touches aren't what he wants, have to answer questions about it all the time? I don't know. So do you want that with your young quarterback? I have some reservations if I'm a team.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's a difficult thing to do. However, if you're the Jets next year and you sit there and say to yourself, well, we got to get weapons for Sam Darnold and there's no one in the wideout market we want to give more than $10 million a year to besides maybe Golden Tate. And even that's going to be a short term deal. I think someone's going to talk themselves into it.
Yeah, it could be a sort of a struggling GM who needs to make a splash. Mm-hmm. And that's a way to do it.
That is absolutely a way to do it. In terms of this game, in terms of Steelers-Saints, are you sort of buying what you saw from the Steelers' defense last week and how they slowed down the Patriots?
Yeah, I think they figured some things out, especially since the Saints are not clicking on all cylinders right now. You know, I think Pittsburgh's a pretty good upset pick this week.
So would you take the Steelers?
I think I would. What are the points? I think I'd rather have the points than give the points.
I'm going to see what they are really quickly here. Steelers are 5.5-point underdogs. So you would take 5.5 with the Steelers?
I'm taking that all day.
All day?
I'm taking the 5.5 all day.
Go to the book. You will see Mike Sando in line with the deed to the Sando house. putting it on the Steelers. No, I agree with you. I think I'd take the points here as well. I think the Steelers are a team that, you know, when they're at their best, you think about that Panthers game a few weeks ago, they are as good as anybody in football. And I think that, granted, the losing streak happened. You know, we don't want to lose to the Raiders. It's not an impressive thing, but I think there's some recency bias there in terms of how they played. And I just think they, you know, I think the defense is too good to be bad for so long.
Can the Steeler fan base come back to reality? I mean, when they're losing to the Chargers, my good friend Aladdin Freeman, who works at ESPN, is like calling me almost renouncing his fandom. He's so sick of it, you know. And then my brother-in-law Brian is from, you know, went to Penn State. He's from Pennsylvania, and this whole last weekend, before they win, he's like practically renouncing. You know, he's totally frustrated. Rocky Blyers can't even keep it together. They lost three games in a row. I mean, that's just very disappointing to me to see the standards that high. I'm a little bit tongue-in-cheek here, but come on. I mean, that's just part of football, right? How many fan bases' worst problem is a three-game losing streak?
Yeah, I mean, two losses on the road to Denver and Oakland. You don't want to lose to the Raiders, it's fair to say, but those are, you know, two games they lost by a combined 10 points. And losing to the Chargers, I mean, it's not a lot of shame in losing to the Chargers. That's going to be a really good football team. I mean, you play them, it's going to come down to, you know, one break here or there, so... I absolutely agree.
There was a lot of shame, though. There was a lot of shame. Believe me, these guys were just over the top in their angst over the team, and it's like, hold on, they're still going to be there in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're going to be just fine heading into the postseason. I do think they're going to end up claiming the AFC North and hosting a playoff game. Let's see if they'll probably be the 3 seed or the 4 seed? 4 seed, I think.
Yeah.
So then, who would they play? It would be Steelers, Chargers in a rematch. In the first round of the playoffs, probably in Pittsburgh. I think I'd still take the Steelers to win that game, even though they lost the first time those two teams played in Pittsburgh.
I probably would too, even though I think I have Chargers over Saints as my Super Bowl pick that was made, you know, like, I don't know, 2 months ago. So I'm kind of leaning that way, but I almost feel like the Chargers might lose to the Ravens this week too. I think they're really good, but I think they can be had too, and Pittsburgh may win a rematch.
Yeah, I think that's a tough matchup for the Chargers in a lot of ways without Denzel Perryman, just given how effective the Ravens are running the football with Lamar Jackson. But we're out of time. We spent so much time in the Pro Bowl, we don't have any more time to talk about these games, but an exciting weekend coming up. And of course, if you want to read more about them and read about Mike Stumps, where can you do that?
E Plus, the ESPN app. And you can follow me on Twitter at Sando ESPN.
Highly recommended on both counts. Get E Plus, read Mike's stuff, follow Mike on Twitter. Sir, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Have a happy holidays. We'll have you back on in the new year.
Thank you. Always enjoy it.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest, Mike Sando of ESPN. Again, if you didn't hear it last week, we are actually working on a survey for this show. We'd love for you guys to fill it out just so we can get more insight into what you enjoy, what you maybe don't enjoy as much about the show, so we can give you the best show possible going forward into next season. Fill it out. It'll take a couple seconds. You can do it on your phone, do it on your laptop, desktop. I guess if you have like a tower from 1998, you could probably do it if you're working on your Packard Bell. However, whatever you're using to get there, it's going to be http://swerve.in. That's S as in Sam, W as in William, U R as in Roger, V.in/Barnwell. My last name, BARNWELL, swerve.in/Barnwell. Just fill it out. Take a couple seconds. We'd really appreciate it. And thanks so much for listening. We're going to come back with a show after Christmas, I believe. Next show is going to be on next Friday, so no show on Christmas. I believe Christmas Eve is Monday, but no show over the Christmas break. Thanks so much for listening. If you're celebrating Christmas, have a wonderful Christmas, and we'll come back to you next Friday.